And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today we have with us Dr. Barry Prezant. Dr. Prezant is recognized as one of the leading scholars in autism spectrum disorders and has more than 40 years' experience as a clinical scholar, a researcher, and a consultant for persons with related disabilities and their families. He's a speech-language pathologist, faculty at Brown University, and director of Childhood Communication Services. Dr. Prezant has presented more than 700 seminars internationally and has received many honors, including the 2005 Princeton University Eden Career Award in Autism, the 2013 Divine Neurotypical Award of GRASP, and the 2014 Honors of the American Speech-Language Hearing Association. He has authored 4 books and is the co-author of the CERDS Educational Model for Individuals with Special Needs that is currently being implemented in a dozen countries all around the world. In addition, he has written 120 articles and chapters about autism and writes a regular column at the Autism Quarterly magazine. His latest book is titled Uniquely Human, a different way of seeing autism that is challenging many to rethink how this condition has been understood. Dr. Prezant has been kind enough to come speak to us today to help us understand this new approach that could very well revolutionize how autism is treated. Hello, Dr. Prezant. How are you today? Thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon, Rebecca. It is my pleasure.
Thank you. So I'm sure you have heard this question a million times. Why did you write Uniquely Human?
I wrote Uniquely Human because I've actually felt for many years, if not decades, that descriptions of people with autism and the experience of autism that we read in the literature, that we saw in the media, are really not very accurate in many ways, especially the notion of autism just simply being a tragedy for the person who has that diagnosis, as well as for the family. And I've been doing this since I started in summer camps, literally 46 years ago. And I've worked in so many different kinds of settings, and certainly autism can be a great challenge to the person with autism, also a great challenge to families. But just to simply dismiss it as a tragedy without talking about the full range of experience for the person and the family, in my view, has always been terribly inaccurate.
And you have 40 years experience to accumulate all of that knowledge base and the way you have related to not just people that have autism, but their families, have brought you to a place where you can make that assessment.
Yes. And one of the major themes in my book is what I've learned over all these decades from autistic people as well as from families. And certainly when we talk about children and adults with a diagnosis of autism, that's come through a lot of my experience in consulting to schools. Over the last decade and a half, I've had the great opportunity to get to know autistic adults. And by the way, I'm intentionally using the term autistic adults as opposed to adults with autism, because autistic adults prefer to be called that. They see that's their identity rather than saying a person who happens to have autism.
And I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that that is a very big point of controversy, correct?
It's extremely controversial. And my book is written in what's called person-first language, child with autism, adult with autism. And of course, much of the book was written 2-3 years ago. And talk about continuing to learn from autistic people, the reactions of some autistic people was, do not call us that. You know, I consider myself autistic because it's an inseparable part of who I am. So it's still controversial, and I like to go both ways. What's very interesting is some parents prefer that their children be referred to as a boy with autism or a student with autism or a little girl with autism, whereas many autistic adults prefer the opposite, that they be referred to as autistic.
So there's a difference between how the parents want their child to be perceived and how the adult has come to perceive themselves.
Yes. And right now, I literally have come to respect both positions. And that's why if you read Uniquely Human, you will see I use person first language, child with autism, person with autism. But even since the book was published, I continue to learn from autistic adults to provide more of a balance. So that's I think, a good starting point. But over the years, the book really is about what I've learned from families and autistic people. And in terms of the family piece, we've been doing a parent weekend retreat for 20 years, where I have the opportunity to spend a weekend with up to 60 parents who happen to have children with autism, and many of them, their children are now adults. And it's amazing to, first of all, watch the parents in terms of how much they support each other. And it's also amazing to see the creativity that so many parents have come up with to be able to not only deal with the challenges, but to take advantage of the strengths and the interests of their children. And of course, the most important lesson, which we try to encapsulate in one chapter in the book, is the journey. That families change, people on the autism spectrum change, and we could learn by understanding where is a person who happens to have autism in his or her journey, and where is the family now in their journey.
Fantastic. And, you know, just by looking at the reviews of your book, I can see that there are many people out there that are very glad that you wrote Uniquely Human because of the perspective that you're bringing to the world.
Yes. And again, getting back to the notion of journey, it's amazing how parents of newly diagnosed children have given us feedback that, you know, this is the way they want to see their child. They want to see it in a hopeful way, not in a way that's sugarcoating autism, because they realize what the challenges are. But at the very beginning, one mother indicated, this is like a roadmap for me in terms of my attitude, in terms of how we should approach my daughter in supporting her in her development. And then we've gotten comments from adults or parents who have adult children who said, you know, Uniquely Human is validating the path we took, because I have a 25-year-old son or daughter right now, and he or she's happy, they're doing well, they need support, but they're doing well. And what you describe in your book contains many of the elements that we took in our journey with our child, so that makes us feel good.
Why do we need to have a better understanding about autism, in your opinion?
That's a great question. It's not simply that we want to be politically correct. It's not just simply that, okay, we're entering, thank goodness, as a society, we're entering stages of being more tolerant and accepting of differences. It's that there still are so many misperceptions and misconceptions. So if autism is just described as, and this is inaccurate, as a behavior disorder, or a person who's a tragic figure, or a person who can't learn, or a person is just simply suffering from his or her autism, if you were an employer, would you want to hire a person like that? Autistic people, in many cases, are incredibly engaging and interesting people. And that's, you know, what I've been doing since summer camp for 46 years, I do because, yes, I love the work, but I love the people I've met. And it's really enhanced my life. And so one of the goals of writing Uniquely Human was to try to get across to other people that having people with autism or other disabilities in your life can make you a better person. It could really open up your mind to how people think differently and see the world differently. I would say one of the most common comments that I get from parents is that, yes, we've had our challenges, but there's no doubt I'm a better person because I have a family member with autism. We've had some parents say, literally, that my son with autism is the best person I know. That my daughter with autism is the most honest person that I've ever met in my life. And those are important things that we can learn from.
Absolutely. And I think that you definitely accomplished that goal in your book. So kudos to you on that. You say that autistic behaviors are human behaviors. How is this different from more traditional views about this subject?
And that's one of the ways that we're hoping the book kind of makes changes in perceptions of autism. So for years, there's been this category of behavior that people have referred to as autistic behavior. And it could be anything from rocking to jumping up and down, to flapping your hands, to spinning, to choosing to not be with people, to choosing to want to spend more time by yourself. And, well, first of all, let me just say, by training, I'm a developmentalist. My training is in child and human development. And just coincidentally, oh, about 18 years ago, I began to raise a son who's now 18 years of age. And one of the things that I learned from my training in child and human development and just studying how children develop, both so-called neurotypical as well as kids with disabilities, is a lot of what we've labeled autistic behaviors and a lot of what, and here's the term that we use, that we have pathologized, that we see only through the window of deficit. So much of that are human behaviors. That we often engage in similar behaviors. We might rock when we're a little upset or we want to concentrate, but we're more likely to do that at our desk at home. And we're less likely to do that in public because we're aware of what other people might think of us. Repetitive language is another characteristic that's been identified in autism. And a specific type of repetitive language is called echolalia, which is just like it sounds like. You echo or you repeat what somebody says. Not only echolalia and repetitive language, but many of these autistic behaviors in the past were seen as symptoms of autism that needed to be reduced. And reduced in some cases by giving negative feedback to the child or the autistic person. Stop rocking. Stop flapping your hands. Don't use that silly talk. And what we're learning from autistic adults now is how much that hurt them. How much, and this is one of the other major misconceptions, that people with autism are insensitive to other people, how much they heard that and how much it hurt their self-esteem, thinking I can't get it right. Yet that's more of a reflection of a different learning style and a different style of dealing with sensory sensations in your world. And as we say very clearly in a chapter in the book, it's often a way to cope and to deal with challenges in life. So for years, and unfortunately, and still in some approaches, we tried to get rid of the very strategies that people are using to stay well-regulated emotionally. Things that come naturally to them that may look a little bit different to us, that literally, maybe we should accept or at least begin to say, well, this is why this child is rocking, or this is why this child repeats these questions that we ask, and then provide ways to support them better rather than just saying stop that behavior. So there are so many issues around why we have to take a different approach, but a lot of it comes down to what are the messages that we're giving to autistic people, to children with autism, when we want them to somehow fit this conception of normal behavior, which, as we like to say, what's normal anyway?
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board-certified NUCA practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how NUCA Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
Many of these autistic behaviors in the past were seen as symptoms of autism that needed to be reduced. and reduced in some cases by giving negative feedback to the child or the autistic person. Stop rocking. Stop flapping your hands. Don't use that silly talk. And what we're learning from autistic adults now is how much that hurt them. How much, and this is one of the other major misconceptions, that people with autism are insensitive to other people. How much they heard that and how much it hurt their self-esteem, thinking I can't get it right. Yet that's more of a reflection of a different learning style and a different style of dealing with sensory sensations in your world. And as we say very clearly in a chapter in the book, it's often a way to cope and to deal with challenges in life. So for years, and unfortunately, and still in some approaches, we try to get rid of the very strategies that people are using to stay well-regulated emotionally. Things that come naturally to them that may look a little bit different to us, that's literally, maybe we should accept or at least begin to say, well, this is why this child is rocking, or this is why this child repeats these questions that we ask, and then provide ways to support them better rather than just saying, stop that behavior. So there are so many issues around why we have to take a different approach. But a lot of it comes down to, what are the messages that we're giving to autistic people, to children with autism, when we want them to somehow fit this conception of normal behavior, which, as we like to say, what's normal anyway? We are so different from each other.
So true. You know, and I just have to interject right here. I really love how you talk about sensory interpretation of the world, because to me, the way, and I just find it very interesting, because I see it as you saying that the way they interpret the sensory information in the world is their language. So it's more of a sensory language that we have to figure out what they're trying to say, correct?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. In the first, we talk throughout the book, actually, on the importance of listening. And when we say listening, we're not just talking about what a person says to us. Listen to the body language. Listen to how this child or this person is responding in different situations. When it gets too noisy, when sounds are too loud, when smells are too strong. Now, let me give you an example from my son, who's so-called neurotypical. He is extremely sensitive to smell. And he inherited that. You know, all of this is neurologically based and some of it's genetic. He inherited that from his mother. He's also extremely sensitive to smell. But he's able to say, if we walk into a place that has a strong smell that's aversive to him, he's able to say to me, Dad, it stinks in here. Let's get out of here. Or what's that awful smell? A person with autism may not be able to reflect on their experience and tell us that. So what we see as what's really creating a lot of stress for them, we see that through their behavior. And it doesn't just happen with smells. It doesn't just happen with sound. In the book, we have a whole chapter on what we refer to as emotional memory, that they may see things, a person or a place, that they associate with a lot of stress in their life. And they may want to run out the door, drop to the floor to feel safe. But what they're communicating to us is, something is terribly stressful to me. But unfortunately for many people on the spectrum, they communicate that through their behavior, as opposed to being able to tell us that. Unfortunately, a lot of that behavior, whether it's trying to get out of a seat or leave a classroom or dropping to the floor before going into a noisy gymnasium, a lot of that behavior in the past has just been viewed as bad behavior, what many people refer to as non-compliant behavior. Very common term right now. And we say, we have to go three steps further. Why is this person reacting? Let's assume it's a human reaction. Let's not assume it's an autistic behavior that needs to be punished or corrected. Some cases where it may not be okay for a person to leave, we have to help them learn coping strategies. So going back to the analogy of my son, let's say we have to be in a place and there's very strong smelling cheese, Limburger cheese. And I might say to him, you know, Noah, we just have to be here a few minutes. Can you just either walk away or could you just kind of hold your nose? Because, you know, we promised we would meet somebody here and we just have to stay here until they come. So teaching coping strategies, because I'm sure some people who are listening are saying, but that's life. You have to deal what's difficult and stressful. So this is not just about smoothing over all the bumps in life. This is about understanding where that reaction is coming from and avoiding that circumstance if possible, or helping the person to cope in that situation.
Perfect. I think that's a very powerful point right there, because it's not just interpreting what it means, but then giving the second layer, which is helping them cope.
And let me add one other piece to that. It's not just helping them cope in the moment. It's helping them learn strategies that they can use themselves if they face that situation again. So that's the fancy term for that is self-regulatory strategies. What can you do to regulate your emotional or physiological reaction independently? So let's say if it's a noisy room, we could say, or let's say it's a student in school going into a noisy cafeteria. We could teach that child, well, maybe you could ask to leave and take a break. Maybe you could cover your ears, or maybe you could sit at the quiet table in the corner of the cafeteria. Some schools actually have quiet tables now, away from all the noise. So we hope that down the line, that student will know what to do by themselves. And isn't that what we all do in life?
Exactly, except for what you said, that we usually have the language to say what we need to do, and they have a difficulty with that. This is a great segue to the next question, which is, what are the most important things to focus on for people with autism?
Ah, yes. And let me give a little plug to our educational model now. We have an educational model that's referred to as the CERTS model that I've developed with some colleagues. And in a way, it's kind of like the uniquely human philosophy in practice. And CERTS has been around for just celebrated the 10th anniversary of our manuals. It's being used in 12 different countries, as you mentioned. Well, the reason I'm mentioning this is those are the highest priorities. The acronym CERTS stands for the highest priorities. Number one, the SC is social communication. If you look at research on what's called outcome research in autism, those students or people on the spectrum who do the best are the ones who make the most progress in social communication. Now, I want to be clear here. Social communication does not simply mean those who develop the most sophisticated and complex language. There are non-speaking people on the spectrum who are more engaged with people socially than there are some people on the spectrum who are quite verbal. Okay? So it's how much you're able to engage and stay engaged with people, communicate your thoughts, feelings, and intentions, which, thanks to technology, can now be done through computers, through iPhones, through what's called speech-generating devices, but also through sign language and gestures. So that's social communication, extremely important priority. And just getting back to our example, you can also say that if that student can say, it's too noisy in here, it's hurting my ears, those social communication abilities help him or her to cope. The ER of the CERTS model is emotional regulation. All of us in life, every day we wake up, and we want to have a great day because we feel well-regulated, grounded, we could think clearly, we could communicate clearly, we could solve problems. That all happens when we are well-regulated emotionally and physiologically. Unfortunately, people with autism very often develop problem behaviors, whether it's meltdowns, tantrums. In significant cases, they may do things that hurt other people. Okay, some people call that aggressive behavior, or they may hurt themselves. All of that comes out of a state of turmoil in terms of your emotional state. Same thing with us. We throw a temper tantrum, we have rage reactions, we scream at our children, these are human behaviors, okay? So being well-regulated emotionally is the second major priority, and that's the ER of CERTS. And the TS of CERTS is getting support from others and knowing how to support yourself, okay? So we believe by focusing on social communication abilities, focusing on strategies to stay well-regulated emotionally and physiologically, and then having the appropriate supports in place around you to help you learn, other people to help you. Those are the highest priorities for people on the autism spectrum.
Those are foundations in order to communicate in a healthy manner with anyone, correct?
Well, we believe that for any person, quality of life is often based upon social communication, which also includes developing caring relationships with others, developing trust with others. It's those relationships. I mentioned the emotional regulation and the transactional support. So if you are at the end of your life and you're reflecting on your life, you think about your relationships, you think about those times that you've been able to be with people and you had that ease of communication and connection. You think about the stresses and the times you felt really good when you were well-regulated emotionally. And you think about all the wonderful supports that you've had in your life, maybe a job you loved, all the people you've loved. So we believe this is quality of life for everybody.
Absolutely. And I am so glad you mentioned the word trust, because you do talk about trust in your book in depth. Tell me a little bit more about that. And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for tuning in today to Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Dr. Barry Prezant. Dr. Prezant is recognized as one of the leading scholars in autism spectrum disorders and has more than 40 years' experience as a clinical scholar, a researcher, and a consultant for persons with related disabilities and their families. He is also the author of the book Uniquely Human, a different way of seeing autism that is challenging many to rethink how this condition has been understood. Thanks again for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement. And don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for part two of our interview with Dr. Barry Prezant.